Tom and Joe about Fillmore Street. This is FieldPod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from San Francisco's lovely Lower Haight. Today is Thursday, the 12th of November, 2015. On this date in 1912, King George I of Greece enters Thessaloniki after 482 years of Ottoman rule. 1927, bloodthirsty, starry-eyed internationalist Leon Trotsky is expelled from the Soviet Communist Party, leaving Joseph Stalin, bloodthirsty, not-so-starry-eyed monster, in undisputed control of the Soviet Union. 1936, the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge opens to traffic. 1940, 75 years ago today, Stalin sent Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov to Berlin for intensive talks with Hitler about the Soviet Union joining the Axis. While this was happening, Hitler had already started planning the invasion of the Soviet Union in secret as a contingency, but Stalin very much wanted to join Germany, Japan, and Italy and divide up the rest of the world. As much as anything, it was the Hitler-Stalin pact the year before that had allowed Germany to invade Poland and was responsible for starting World War II. The USSR joining the Axis was the next logical step. So keep that in mind when the Kremlin-sponsored media talks about Russia saving Ukraine from the fascists or when members of parliament in Georgia talk about what a swell guy Stalin was. 1954, after opening in 1892 and sending 12 million people of the world's best and brightest into the United States, Ellis Island closes. If you haven't been to the museum there, go. You take the ferry from Battery Park, go past the Statue of Liberty, and it's just very, very cool. 1969, Seymour Hersh breaks the My Lai story, in which a U.S. Army platoon murders hundreds of Vietnamese civilians and covers it up. All got off except William Cayley, the first lieutenant, who got life in prison but served under house arrest for 3 years. 1979, Carter shuts down oil imports from Iran. 1982, 2 days after Brezhnev died, Yuri Andropov assumes power in the Soviet Union. 1990, Tim Berners-Lee publishes a formal proposal for the World Wide Web. 2011, Silvio Berlusconi tenders his resignation as Prime Minister of Italy. Good riddance. Birthdays are Baha'u'llah, Persian spiritual leader and founder of the Baha'i religion, sculptor Auguste Rodin, parent of modern China, Sun Yat-sen, president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, Philadelphian Grace Kelly, and actress Anne Hathaway. Roland Barthes, French philosopher, theorist, and critic, is 100 years old today. Today is the nobody's so excited about it holiday of Constitution Day in Azerbaijan. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. As ever, this podcast was written by Ari Swieka. Thanks for those posting on our forums. Questions or comments, put it in the forum or email us. Following up on what's happening with Rustavi Ori, as we reported last week, in the evening of the 5th of November, Tbilisi City Court Judge Tamaz Urtmelidze ordered an interim injunction to appoint temporary administrators for Rustavi Ori, replacing Director General Nika Gvaramia and Chief Financial Officer Kaja Damenia with immediate effect. 2 days earlier, on the 3rd of November, the judge had ruled in favor of former owner Kibar Halvashi in the ownership dispute. The Rustavi Ori shareholders are appealing the verdict. According to the ruling by the Constitutional Court a day earlier on the 2nd of November, they suspended a legal clause allowing for an immediate enforcement of the verdict until all avenues for appeal are exhausted. It meant the ownership couldn't be transferred while they were going through the appeals process. Halvashi's lawyers instead sought a court injunction requesting to appoint the plaintiff's desired management for Rustavi II pending the ongoing litigation. They filed the motion on the 4th of November, and Judge Urtmelidze ruled in their favor without an oral hearing. So Rustavi Ori, CEO Nika Gvaramia, and CFO Kaja Damenia were replaced, according to the judge, by Revaz Sakvarishvili, a former chief executive of Imedi TV, and David Dvali, who was co-owner of Rustavi Ori TV up until 2004 for about 11 seconds. According to the judge's order, they have executive powers and the right to control the broadcaster's staffing policy and programming and carry out a reorganization of the channel. Reorganization. One of the justifications cited by Judge Urtmelidze behind the decision was that a certain danger exists that by not appointing contemporary management, Rustaveli might change its format of activities. But wait, that's the idea. That it might lead to the cancellation of several programs, that Rustaveli might instead focus their coverage on the ownership dispute instead of their regular programming. Wow. Judge Ordmalidze says in his decision that it would create a serious threat for the media to lose its main role and function, the protection of public interest, and that under the current management of Nika Gvaramya, it is seriously questionable if they will perform this duty of a media outlet. Well, well, well. In a live televised statement right after midnight on the 6th of November, Nika Gvaramya condemned the judge's decision, saying it's an obvious attempt to determine the broadcaster's editorial policy. Of course, that's the idea. He said, quote, "You don't have to read the whole decision. It can be summarized in just a few words. A dictatorship has been established." Gvaramya continued that Georgia is under the dictatorship of insane Russian oligarch Vidzina Ivanishvili, end quote, and said that taking over Rustaveli will have negative effects on Georgia's European integration. Gvaramya condemned the judge's ruling to replace him as illegal and said he refuses to leave his office. It was well past midnight. Hundreds of people went to the Rustaveli headquarters when the news was announced in solidarity to protect Rustaveli, a group of 9 prominent civil society organizations, including the hardest working NGO in the Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia, the excellently named GRASS, and ISFED, released a statement in the middle of the night saying that the court decision to change the TV's management destroys the editorial independence of Rustaveli. That's the idea. Ruins the media pluralism of the country and has an implication of challenging Georgia's constitutional order and stability. They condemned it as unlawful and that it makes clear that the ongoing litigation over the broadcaster's ownership was aimed at changing its editorial policy and that it was also done to circumvent the ruling of the Constitutional Court. The court order changing Rustaveli's management garnered a lot of international attention and criticism the next day. On the 6th of November, the U.S. Ambassador to Georgia, Ian Kelly, said in a written statement that they are deeply concerned about the developments late Thursday night related to Rustaveli management and ownership and called on the government to uphold principles of media freedom and political pluralism as integral components of Georgia's European path. Justice Minister Tetsu Lukiani responded by asking the U.S. Embassy to explain what they meant by developments that were happening in the night. She explained that the Justice Ministry's public registry received the court's decision on the change of management in Rustaveli at 6 p.m. and that it was registered the next morning. So focusing on technicalities and not the actual issue. Again, later that day, the U.S. Embassy and the EU diplomatic mission in Georgia released a joint statement expressing concern over the appointment of a temporary management for Rustaveli, saying that the decision by the court raises serious questions about the independence of the judiciary and the actual degree of freedom of the media in Georgia. The U.S. think tank Freedom House said the appointment of the new management of Rustaveli ignores orders by the Constitutional Court and undermines democracy in Georgia. The OSCE representative on freedom of media, Dunia Mijatovic, said that editorial decisions should be made in newsrooms, not courtrooms. Attempts by the courts to unduly influence an editorial policy of the media outlet are nothing short of the abuse of rule of law and democratic foundations in a society. The co-rapporteurs for Georgia from the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe and the President of the European People's Party also made statements linking the freedom of media and democracy. President Mark Velashvili said in a televised statement on the 6th of November that the developments of Rustaveli, quote, damage the country's democratic image and international reputation, end quote. He called on people from the Georgian Dream not to limit themselves to official statements, not to close themselves off, but to actually get to the significance of the political process and protect the country's democratic image. Republican lawmaker Dato Bertanashvili said that his party strongly distances itself from these processes, but would like to stick around in parliament and keep its faction, that the government does not need such Ertmalidze-style disservice, while Parliamentary Speaker Dato Usupashvili, also from the Republican Party, said that it's and this is interesting, listen to this, inadmissible to let political life in the country play out under a Saakashvili-Khalvashi scenario. Also criticized that important decisions are being taken in the courts without an oral hearing. comments were fairly weak, and the Saakashvili Chalvashi comments mirrors a spin that BI had put on it, that somehow Chalvashi and Misha are in league with each other, which everybody knows is not a real thing. Saakashvili and Dvali, the temporary new managers of Rustaviotti, assured us at a press conference that they are not going to interfere with Rustaviotti's editorial independence. They're not going to fire journalists once they take over day-to-day operations, and also that they will not take over the broadcaster by force with police and won't kick Varamia out of his office by force, that they're going to cooperate and show their goodwill. Kibor Chalvashi has announced that he made a verbal agreement with two other former Rustaviotti owners, David Dvali and Jadri Akimidze, that he is ready to give them half of his shares if he wins in the final court case. They said, since he never thought that he was going to get anything anyway, they said that they will distance Rustaviotti from all political forces. On the 7th of November, in a bid to calm tensions, the temporary managers of Rustaviotti offered the current owners, the Karamanishvili brothers, to name any person for them to grant power of attorney with full authority to perform all the executive functions required for the smooth day-to-day operations of the TV station. They said it's to prevent a leadership vacuum, since Nika Gvarami and financial director Domenia are both suspended, while the temporary managers are not able to actually assume their duties. So there's a big risk for negative effects on the company's day-to-day operations. Which is the idea. They want to change the day-to-day operations. Gvaramia responded that if the owners accepted the offer, it would be best if Zal Udmashvili, who is the deputy director general and an anchor on Rustaviotti's main news program, assumes power of attorney. Later in that day, Rustaviotti shareholder Georgi and Levon Karamanishvili turned down the proposal, saying they have nothing to talk about with government-appointed political censors. Boom! They said it was a proposal from the Ivanishvili government, full of obvious cynicism, because the same party that is the source of the problem then hypocritically expresses desires to help solve that problem, end quote. Exactly. BI commented on the Rustaviotti developments on the 10th of November. He said that the Tbilisi City Court Judge Urtmelidze's move to appoint temporary managers to Rustaviotti without an oral hearing is politically absolutely damaging for the government, and that if it really was him behind it and influencing the judiciary, then he would not have done something so obvious. He would have done something more underhanded. And commenting on the international reactions, BI said that many inaccurate statements are made. On the 11th of November, temporary managers Saakashvili and Dvali said that they made up their minds to give deputy director Rustavi to Zal Udmashvili, the authority as general director, that they spoke with him about it, and that they registered it at the public registry. An hour after their statement, Rustaviotti responded in a live studio broadcast, and Udmashvili said that they had not agreed to the offer, and so it's impossible for them to have actually registered it because they didn't sign anything. The evening of the 11th of November, the public registry denied having registered a document appointing a new manager to Rustaviotti. The public registry called it a blatant lie when the temporary managers declared they turned over the new management documents. Then, on Thursday, the 12th of November, the city court judge Tamas Urtmelidze partly overturned his earlier ruling and reinstated Rustaviotti's top management, including Director General Nika Gvaramia and Financial Director Kaja Damenia. Their executive powers are restored at least until the appellate process into the judge's earlier decision on replacing the management is completed. At the same time, according to a press release by the Tbilisi City Court, one of the temporary managers appointed by the judge last week, Revas Saakashvili, has retained his executive powers in the broadcaster. The judge's written decision is not available, so it's not clear precisely what executive powers he has retained. Clearly, there was an international wall of criticism of this, and it really helped. So thank you, Euro-Atlantic Georgia team. Keep paying attention, because as we know, this will continue. A note related to Rustaviotti's court case on the 9th of November, five members of the High Council of Justice claimed in a statement that Urtmelidze, who was presiding over the Rustaviotti case, was repeatedly insulted, criticized, and was under serious pressure by local and foreign officials and figureheads during the time in court. Yeah. On the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Federica Mogherini, who is a big shot, was on an official visit to Georgia. She arrived on the 10th of November from Ukraine. She met with the president, prime minister, and foreign minister, parliamentary speaker, as well as leaders of other parliamentary factions and civil society representatives. She also visited the administrative boundary line with South Ossetia, accompanied by the EUMM. After meeting with Kharibashvili, Mogherini hailed Georgia's good work and strong political will in implementing the Visa Liberalization Action Plan, called for calm and restraint ahead of the 2016 parliamentary elections, and noted the importance of media freedom, rule of law, and judicial independence. On visa liberalization, Mogherini said that she cannot predict what the relevant EU institutions will decide, but that there are positive signs and she has hopes for good news for Georgia. As a reminder, the European Commission is expected to release a report on how Georgia is implementing its Visa Liberalization Action Plan on the 15th of December. As a note, in a separate interview, the European Parliament's rapporteur for Georgia said that it is a 99% certainty that the visa-free regime will be introduced next year in 2016. Defense Minister Tiniko Khidashelli is on an official visit to Japan. She met with her Japanese counterpart, Jen Nakatani, in Tokyo on the 12th of November. This is the first ever official visit of a Georgian defense minister to Japan. They signed a memorandum of cooperation. Delegation from the IMF is in Georgia from the 9th to the 21st of November. They're on an economic assessment mission and will be meeting with people from the finance and economy ministries and from the National Bank. From our Oakland correspondent, Bloomberg reports on a Georgian born Israeli who is the mastermind behind a major hacking operation in the U.S. that also runs an illegal online casino. Reportedly, they hacked into major financial institutions and stole information on 100 million customers. It's in our Things to Read for the details. The Alliance of Patriots held a rally in Tbilisi on the 8th of November against election fraud and demanding the resignation of the defense minister and environment minister. Several hundred people attended. The Alliance of Patriots claims that there was election fraud in the members of parliament by elections that were on the 31st of October in two districts. Alliance of Patriots leader Irma Inaishvili accused the Georgian Dream Coalition candidate of personally participating in the election fraud and said she's on hunger strike to protest for change in the election environment. Following up on previous month's stories, on the 6th of November, the Tbilisi City Court found police officer Georgi Sosanashvili guilty of the murder of Yuri Vazgazashvili, who was killed by an explosion at his son's grave earlier this year in January 2015. He was sentenced to 20 years. He's a policeman at the Tsalka region in southern Georgia. The prosecutor's office explained his motivation for the murder. According to their account, policeman Sosanashvili killed Yuri Vazgazian because he was running an awareness and human rights campaign surrounding the murder of his son, Zura Vazgazishvili, who was killed by police in 2006. The prosecutor's office claimed that the policeman didn't want the investigation of the 2006 murder to reopen because he knew and respected the people involved and didn't want them going to prison. So he killed Vazgazishvili's father so that no one would be campaigning to continue the investigation. As a reminder, the three former and four law enforcement agents in the Vazgazashvili Jr. murder case were found guilty last week and sentenced to between 8 and 12 years. Following up on previous week's stories, back in May, Zura Japaridze, who was the UNM's executive secretary in parliament, announced that he and a few others quit the UNM, including Paliko Kubalashvili. They've now announced that they founded a new party called Girchi, or Pinecone, as a symbol of freshness. The aim is to create a new political center and attract and involve professionals into the political process. So they're going for the super smart Yabloko voters. Great. They want an open and free parliamentary list for the 2016 parliamentary elections. There won't be any pre-selected people, meaning they don't know anybody who's willing to run with them. A well-known UNM member, Andrew Barnoby, announced on his Facebook last week that he's leaving the UNM. He said he's going to establish an NGO and wants to work directly with the public and civil society for the goal of promoting Western culture. There's been public outcry surrounding a prominent lawyer who was beaten by police, including the chief of the police station at the Vaque Sabartalo police station on number 5 in the early hours of the 8th of November. He was hospitalized. The prosecutor's office opened an investigation. Chief of the police station was suspended pending an investigation. The lawyer, Dinaradze, worked for the state-funded legal aid service, which provides free legal counsel and representation for people who can't pay an attorney. Rights groups said the case highlighted the lack of efficient accountability mechanisms and the problem of impunity within the law enforcement system. Public defender Uchenanueshvili said in a statement that the investigation into the case will be a test for the authorities that will show how human rights are being protected by the country. The government is still pressuring President Margvelashvili to move out of the presidential palace that Misha built and for him to move into the Antonelli residence that the government fixed up for him and he doesn't want to move into. On the 9th of November, the Minister of Economy, Dmitry Kumtsishvili, called on the president to decide in a timely way what he is going to do about the Antonelli residence. He outlined that the government is allocating finances every month to keep the residence ready for him to use. The president's administration responded that Margvelashvili does not plan to move out of the presidential palace. As a reminder, in an interview in October on Imedi TV, BI again criticized Margvelashvili for moving into Misha's presidential palace, which is kind of weird. I mean, a strange preoccupation of his, unless they intend to do something with the building, like sell it. It's a very nice, big, fancy building or something else. B.I. says that he thinks it's too lavish, which is a strange thing for a billionaire to say who's right on the other side of the valley in his own sort of palace overlooking the city. But, you know, hey, who am I to say the private citizen is a little bit out of line for criticizing the president for living in the presidential palace? On the 4th of November, the Constitutional Court ruled that a provision in Georgia's Freedom Charter, which bars former senior Soviet officials and Communist Party members from holding posts in state institutions, is unconstitutional. They said it goes against Article 17 of the Constitution about the right to dignity. They said the provisions treat former Soviet officials as targets of the law instead of being objects of the law. Yeah, I don't know. French philosopher André Glucksmann died this week at age 78. He wrote about Soviet oppression and was considered a great friend of the people of Caucasus. His son, Raphael Glucksmann, was an advisor to Misha, kind of Daniel Kunin's replacement. He also shares a child with Ekis Guladze, who used to work for the Millennium Challenge people in Georgia, then the Interior Ministry under Bono, and is now Deputy Interior Minister of Ukraine. In Azerbaijan, on the 12th of November, human rights activist Arif Yunus was released from jail because of his failing health. However, he's under pseudo-house arrest and cannot leave Baku. He was sentenced in August to 7 years in prison for economic crimes. His wife, Leyla Yunus, is also a human rights activist, also arrested and still in prison. She's sentenced to 8.5 years. The UN's International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD, is going to increase its investment to Georgia by 30% in 2016. IFAD President Kayayo Nawaze visited Georgia this week and said that they're increasing the investment because Georgia achieves progress in the agricultural sector through their partnership with IFAD. Council of Europe and the EU are financing 8 new projects in Georgia with a total budget of 3.6 million euros to be implemented over 2 years. The projects would cover things like social reintegration of prisoners, countering money laundering, promoting professionalism in media, civic integration of national minorities, and more. Ministry of Economy is launching a $150 million project to make internet available in all regions and valleys in the country. The whole project is being financed directly by BI. Co-investment fund will be financing several major projects worth $2 billion in infrastructure, the energy sector, dairy farming, and more. Plans were announced at a meeting of the Government Economics Council. So far, they are financing the Ntvaresi hydropower plant in East Georgia, the Tskeni, Tskhali, and Oni hydropower plants in West Georgia, a dairy farm and milk-producing facility, a hotel and recreation center in Shekhvatili Seaside Zone, and the much-hated Panorama Tbilisi project, Hotel Axis Towers in Vake, and a Bitcoin mining center that uses unimaginable volumes of free electricity and more. Major portion of the projects are due to be completed in 2017. Georgian troops are participating in the 2015 Iron Sword military exercises in Lithuania, which are running until the 20th of November. 9 other NATO countries are taking part in the drills. Georgia is the only non-NATO country. A new fabrication laboratory, or Fab Lab, was opened in Tbilisi by Tbilisi City Hall and Georgian Technical University. It has modern tools and equipment for technical students and small-scale producers, innovators, and startups to use. A second fab lab is scheduled to open at Tbilisi State University before the end of the year. New Justice House opened in the village of Stepanets Mindo, which everybody knows as the village of Kazbegi. It is the 16th Justice House in the country. Justice Minister Teodosia Lukiani was at the opening. In the evening of the 10th of November, a small group of activists in Tbilisi observed a day of remembrance for transgender victims of violence. The day marks the one-year anniversary of the murder of a transgender woman, Sabi, who was stabbed in her Sabartalo flat in November 2014, and the flat was then set on fire. The suspected murderer was acquitted by Tbilisi City Court in August. Activists held a commemoration with candles in front of the Justice House. German company Henkel announced they will open a plant in Georgia in Gardabani municipality. They're investing 6 million euros into the plant. It will produce adhesive materials. The plant is due to open at some point in 2016. The Estonian e-governance academy, together with Italy's CSI Piemonte, launched an e-government project in Georgia funded by the EU. China's Southern Airlines is launching new routes from Tbilisi International Airport to several Chinese and U.S. cities. It links the Chinese hub cities of Urumqi and Hangzhou to New York, Toronto, and L.A. through Tbilisi. Police reportedly uncovered 10 million lari stolen from the Bank of Georgia, hidden in a basement in Tbilisi apartment building. They posted a video, Ministry of Interior site, showing how they found it. They know who stole it, and it involves a bank employee, but the investigation is still technically underway, despite the video that the Interior Ministry put up. Georgia's state-owned shareholding company, the Partnership Fund, is implementing two projects together with a local Geno Invest. They plan to build an eco-green city near Tbilisi. The idea was launched about 2 months ago, but it wasn't known then who would implement the project. The other project is to build a spa, hotels in Bakuriani, ski village, and also in Mscheta. The Partnership Fund announced plans to create a new financial institution, which will, according to the Economy Ministry, support the promotion of exports. That's all the information we have for now. Reportedly, there was a government decree to create a free industrial zone in Tbilisi covering 17 hectares in Goldani District. It'll be operated by the company Georgia Technology Park Limited. They'll have until February 2016 to submit the free industrial zone development plan to the Ministry of Economy. As a reminder, in the summer, the company Bitfury announced that they are building a Bitcoin mining venture in Goldani. For those who don't know, to mine Bitcoin, you need giant farms of processors that use tons of electricity, so that it will be worth taking a look at how this thing gets all their electricity. An employee of the co-investment fund, George Kikvadze's Twitter handle is at BitFuryGeorge. So there seems to be some very close cooperation between the government, the borrower, and the lender. And of course, that always works fabulously. Ukraine's foreign ministry said that they are fining anyone in Ukraine driving a vehicle with Abkhazian or South Ossetian license and registration. Or license plates. Rugby Europe President Octavian Moura-Riou is expected to meet with representatives from Six Nations, which is Europe's top rugby tournament, to discuss the idea of giving up-and-coming competitors like Georgia and Romania greater contact with the Tier 1 nations. The Six Nations are England, France, Ireland, Italy, Scotland, Wales. It has no structure for allowing entry for Tier 2 teams. During the Rugby World Cup in October, there was a petition going around to let Georgia in the Six Nations. Some sports experts were calling to overhaul the system. The company Healthy Water, which produces Nabeglavi and Bakhmara waters, is building a new factory in Guria. They are also expanding to produce juice and lemonades. It'll cost 30 million euros to build a new enterprise due to open in 2016, and it's being implemented with Swiss and Austrian partners, and EBRD. Tbilisi City Hall with Tbilisi Transport Company is going to rehabilitate Turtle Lake Ropeway. The design phase is complete. They announced a tender for the repairs work. Ropeway closed in 2009. The Georgian film God of Happiness by director Dito Tsintsadze won the Golden Beaver Main Jury Prize at the 37th Bieberbach Film Festival in Germany. The film is about an unemployed Georgian actor living in Germany who's meeting with his estranged teenage daughter and tries to make it seem that he is successful. And the film Venice by Georgian director Rusudan Chonia, which is still in post-production, won the Post Pitch Award and €25,000 at the Cottbus Film Festival in Germany. It's a black comedy about residents in an unfinished apartment complex who finally have the opportunity to complete construction, but now have to compromise. 25-year-old rugby hooker Shalva Mamukashvili joined the Glasgow Warriors for the rest of the season. He played for the Lelos in the recent Rugby World Cup last season. He was with the British club Sale Sharks. The Kahuri Wine Cellar Company presented some wines at the Hong Kong International Wine and Spirits Fair 2015 last week. Their Sapodavi won the gold medal in the Best Regional Wine in Eastern Europe category. A whole bunch of Georgian wine companies also presented in the Anno Expo 2015 International Wine Fair in Poland. Parliamentary news. Last week, Defense Minister Tineke Khedashely presented to Parliament Defense and Security Committee on comprehensive reforms planned for the armed forces. Khedashely said that the goal is to develop an army of new military capabilities and high combat readiness. She walked out of the parliamentary discussion of that and was asked about nothing but Rustavi Odi and was very ticked off about it. Anyway, the plans are for a new reserve system, either by scrapping or modifying or reducing the conscription system down to 6 months, also creating better social conditions for service members. Then on the 10th of November, Parliament's Judicial Committee approved a draft bill about ending compulsory military service. The bill was co-authored by Member of Parliament Zuta Japaridze, who's a former UNM member now with a new political party, Pinecone. His explanation for proposing to scrap the compulsory military service is that it doesn't actually contribute to defensive capabilities, which of course is true. Then only 25% of recruits per year actually do real service. Otherwise, they serve in ministries or as security service employees or try to escape service altogether by doing all sorts of things like forging papers or going to university. If approved, the bill will come into force on the 1st of January 2016. The Judiciary Committee suggested introducing professional military service in stages. The government will submit to Parliament a draft of amendments to the 2015 state budget. It envisages adding 96 million lari to the health care ministry for the universal health care program and cutting 77 million lari from the Ministry of Regional Development. The draft amendment has yet to be unveiled, but Finance Minister Nodar Khaduri told a government session on the 9th of November that the proposal will also involve increasing the target of tax revenues by 120 million lari this year. Parliament adopted amendments in the 2015 state budget less than 4 months ago, in which the initial target for the tax revenues were cut by 200 million lari. On the 10th of November, Gogi Topadze, a lawmaker from the Industrialist Party, which is part of the Georgian Dream Coalition, announced that he plans to resign from Parliament. He explained in a statement that he is leaving Parliament so that his opinion on certain issues won't be a hindrance to the goals of the coalition. You'll remember that Topadze recently appeared on a political talk show on Maestro TV and was glorifying Stalin, although I can't imagine that this actually had anything to do with it. I'd be curious if anybody knows why Gogi's taken off. The meme this week is an advertisement by Russian mobile phone provider MTS that's getting people very angry in Georgia. The commercial shows happy people using the phone around town. It says service is available in all of Russia, except the video is clearly shot in Tbilisi. The people are pictured on the Peace Bridge, at the Justice House, and the Tbilisi History Museum, but the commercial makes it seem as if it's in Russia. The BBC reported on their News from Elsewhere section. We mentioned that last week, but we couldn't find the video, but now we have. Michael Cicieri writes for Foreign Affairs on the political fighting in Georgia that got a lot more visible over the last 2 months between Georgian Dream and UNM. He says that Moscow sees an opportunity to boost their local allies, requires registration, but we put in a link to it. Forbes contributor Melik Kailan argues that the Rustavi Odi de facto takeover and renewed fighting in eastern Ukraine in November are related events, something coordinated or planned by the Kremlin while the world is distracted by Syria. He looks at the history of tarnishing opponents before major political events or elections. So, for example, now there was the Ukraine WikiLeaks based in Russia. Misha coup conversation to tarnish Misha's image with disinformation before the local elections in Ukraine. Researchers from the Tolerance and Diversity Institute noted document that the Georgian state actually obstructs the construction of new places of worship that are non-Georgian Orthodox. The Bloomberg investigation on the Georgian-led bank fraudsters, as mentioned above, Joshua Kuseta reports for the Bugpit blog on Eurasianet and the International Criminal Court's investigation into the August 2008 war. He notes that among Georgian sides suspected of war crimes are units that were trained by the U.S. and could jeopardize future U.S. trainings. NSS Mag has a gallery on street style at Tbilisi Fashion Week, as does Vogue. More from Vogue covering the Mercedes-Benz Tbilisi Fashion Week. Vogue says that Georgian footwear designers are on game and that Georgians are very happy to tell that they have a long tradition of shoemaking. Vogue also reports on where to shop in Tbilisi from the opinion of a New York-based Georgian designer. Madi Nikuradze reports for Open Democracy on the horrible working conditions in mining town Chiatura. Tata Isabella Burton reports for the BBC from the Avostumani Soviet-era Space Observatory and the challenges they're facing in research, first with Soviet planning, telescopes that don't work, and lack of funding. BBC's news from elsewhere on the Russian mobile phone company passing Tbilisi off as Russia, as mentioned again. Georgian Journal reports on the growing state budget. According to the 2016 budget plan, next year's government salaries will increase by 57 million lari. When the lari was depreciating badly this year, the government declared a policy of tightening our belts, yet the state budget ends up allocating more money for government officials. CRC looks at the consumption of food items and what people in Georgia restrict when they consume based on budgetary constraints. And in comments from last week from Sarah Cobham, the latest book about Georgia, a fictionalized novel that explores the relationship Georgia has with both indigenous and foreign women, is available to order from a link right below here. All this stuff to read, post on the forum. Geocapital number this week is 0.9%. This is how much oil exports have dropped through the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline from January to October 2015 compared to 2014, according to a SOCAR source. Source says it's because of declining oil output at the Azeri, Chirag, and Guneshli oil fields in Azerbaijan. Tbilisi is hosting a Baroque music festival. It's on the 6th of December. Go to tbf.ge for the schedule. There's also a promo video with an interesting Georgian Baroque mashup. As a reminder, the American Friends of Georgia are having their charity Christmas gala at Tbilisi at the Radisson on Saturday, the 12th of December. The funds will go to two projects, to the Mercy Center Hospice and for children with leukemia in Georgia. This is always really fun, and you should go to this if you can. In London on the 25th of November at the Royal Asiatic Society, there is a talk with Oxford researcher Nikolaos Alexidze. It will be a brief history of religion in Georgian political thought. And it will be interesting. Contact the British Georgian Society if you want to attend. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is @txtbuk. Our email is tpeelpod@gmail.com. Or post to the forum on our website, www.tpeelpod.com. And we will finish with, from 2010, this is Duck Sauce and Barbara Streisand.
Streisand. Streisand. Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand.